how should we do these questions? Do we want to, I noticed some in the chat. Should we go through the chat really quickly?
Yeah, Amber's about to read one, I think.
Oh, yeah, okay. I saw one, if you guys can hear me okay. Good.
Yep,
so this one is from Nancy Bale. How will warming affect predators? I understand that lice are a relatively recent issue with wolves, and is there a new form of maned or poodle coat appearing in the interior of wolves?
Yeah, this is John. I, you know, lice, it's not really a climate change phenomenon. I mean, lice, I think, showed up on the Kenai Peninsula in 1982, I think. And, you know, it's almost certainly from domestic dog transmission. So that one, I don't really, you know, point directly to a climate change phenomenon. It's not like these, some of these pathogens I mentioned that are actually moving up, you know, because partly because the pathogens themselves are being transmitted through populations to the east and to the south of Alaska. But the other thing that's happening, of course, is the vector itself, you know, the animals themselves are actually moving northward as well in this instance. So there is a climate change phenomenon there. So it's a little bit different than the lice issue. I don't know if that answers the question, but that's close to what I was thinking.
Okay, here's another one. John, do you have any information about raccoons in Alaska, particularly in Prince William Sound and Kenai Peninsula? In 1970, I found a dead raccoon on the railroad tracks between Portage and Grandview near headwaters of Placer River. I have always wondered about where that raccoon came from. An anomaly? A pet that fell off the train? An expansion of the range? Curious if you have heard of any other anecdotal observations.
I'm amazed at that. I wish you probably didn't think of taking a photo back then. I would love to hear. It's got me interested. I'm definitely going to poke around and see if there's any other observations of raccoons in Alaska, because I've never heard this. This is new to me, and I'm really intrigued by it. You know, down in Southeast Alaska, fishers are showing up. In Southeast, they're basically coming over from British Columbia. So we've got a lot of this movement that's coming over, you know, depending on what part of Alaska you're in. You know, we definitely have movement coming into Alaska now. But the raccoons, I gotta say, that's a first for me. I've never heard that.
Here's another one. Denaina people on the peninsula traditionally harvested caribou for hundreds, if not thousands of years before colonization. They were lucky to survive after colonizers killed off the woodland caribou. All clothing in the collections from the 1800s were made of caribou. Is there an estimate of how long how big the woodland caribou herd was before Andrew Berg knowingly killed the last one?
You know, that's a really interesting story. There's a lot of debate about when the first moose showed up on the Kenai Peninsula, because Andrew Berg swore that he saw the first one swim across Turnagain Arm in, I want to say like 1880 or something. And so, and that's been kind of kicked around in the literature for a while. But when I talk to folks like the late Alan Boris, you know, who was very familiar with all the archaeological records here, he just flat out said, no, there were not moose here. They came in recently. And I'm more convinced of that now than I was when I first got to the Kenai here 20 years ago, in the sense that we're seeing moose spread all, you know, basically what they're doing is moose are finishing up their their post-Pleistocene colonization of northwestern Alaska. So you've got, you know, moose really showed up like on Togiak Refuge, you know, on the other side of the Alaska Peninsula. There showed up back in the 1980s. There really weren't any moose, and boom, all of a sudden there's moose, and they've really taken off there. They've popped up over the North Slope, and, you know, there's a huntable population up there in the northwest corner now, where, you know, back in the 80s, when I first came up to Alaska in the 80s, you know, we just didn't see moose north of the Brooks Range. So, you know, this is all fairly new. And in researching this piece that I shared with you today, it was kind of interesting. I got a record of the someone's going to have to help me here because it's down in Southeast Alaska that I'm not familiar with. It's the Stikine tribe, right down on the Stikine River. They have an oral history of a glacier blowing out and forming a tunnel and the first moose coming over through the mountains by walking down the river. And I'm like just blown out by this. I mean, this is just a phenomenal story, and it kind of fits with what we think is happening as moose are moving on to into the coastal range area. But at any rate, aside, you know, at the end of the day, I'm convinced that it was caribou on the Kenai. I'm pretty sure that that's what we're talking about. So I absolutely agree. I don't have any idea how many caribou were here. In fact, I've tried to poke at it a little bit more. I'm fairly convinced it was a woodland caribou, but I don't really know that. And I can't find anything definitive because unfortunately, by the time, the museum guys came along and documented, you know, right after that, it was basically was extirpated off the Kenai Peninsula. And it's really a crime because I think that might've been one of the few species here on the Kenai that really was a very different, you know, endemic. Because the next nearest caribou was on the north side of the Alaska range. So it was, you know, definitely a very unusual population of caribou. You got me excited with that one. That was a good question.
Here's a couple that are kind of similar. Any idea how long it might take for blacktails to make it to the southern Kenai Ketchumak Bay area? They're easier to harvest than a moose.
You know, I saw that question and another question about, you know, whether or not it was filling a empty ecological niche. And I would say the answer is yes, in the sense that what kept Sitka blacktail deer from following Sitka spruce all the way up, you know, as far as the natural colonization of the coast there is basically a big glacier got in the way back when. So it's a glaciation issue that prevented, you know, Sitka blacktail deer from getting here in the first place. And I'll stick my neck out here because I don't work for the federal agency anymore. I think when Sitka blacktail deer take off here on the Kenai, they'll take off very fast. They'll go from zero to a bunch in a very short time. I won't make any predictions when, but when it does happen, I think one day it'll be just kind of like the way the mule deer and the white-tailed deer showed up. There were a few, you know, observations in the last 10 years up in the Fairbanks area, and all of a sudden, boom, now we have a huntable population. And it'll happen very quickly, I think, when it does happen. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, there's one. Eric's Sandberg, can you rephrase that question, or do you want to talk? Or
I guess I unmuted now.
Yep.
It should read reforest to mix hardwood and spruce. after this fire?
You know, that's an interesting question. You know, you know how fire works. Basically, you have to burn through the duff if you want to get hardwood regeneration. So it has to be a very intense fire. And of course, much of the Swan Lake fire was very intense. And I think we will see a lot of hardwood regeneration in some of that. But one of the things we're actually watching for, and I'm just going to say this, and I really don't know how it's going to play out, and it'll be a very interesting piece, is we're also expecting our forests here on the Kenai to be a lot less dense than they have been historically. So, because we're expecting, you know, all of the models that we have show a really strong grass signature in the model. So we're really expecting more and more Calamagrossis canadensis to be popping up, kind of what we're seeing in the Caribou Hills area. And the only reason I think we don't see it in the northern part of the Kenai is because of the glacial moraine there with all the peatland bogs that are keeping the system fairly moist. But they're drying out too. And I think it's just a matter of time before we start seeing, instead of, you know, whether it's hardwood or softwood regeneration, I think at some point we're gonna start seeing a switch to more and more grass. And it'll be interesting to see what comes back on the Swan Lake, because that was an intense fire.
Can we expect an introduction of bison into the area anytime soon?
No, well, that's something we've talked about. There's a lot of issues with bison reintroduction on the Kenai. I think if you know anything about the the fossil record in the Caribou Hills area, is that there were steppe bison there, 40,000 years ago. And maybe more recently than that, we just haven't found the fossils with the carbon dating. They could have been there as recently as 20,000 years ago. But part of the problem is that it's outside, the Kenai is outside of what has been deemed the historical range of the woodland, of wood bison. So the problem is that, if we wanted to introduce wood bison to the Kenai Peninsula, we wouldn't really be allowed to under the Endangered Species Act. So there's a problem there, depending on where you're talking about introducing bison. If you're on or off the refuge, then you start running into issues with things like the Wilderness Act, if it's on the refuge, but off the refuge, there's things that could be done.
So there are no steppe bison left to reintroduce.
Well, steppe bison were the precursors. Out of the steppe bison came the wood bison and the plains bison. They basically branched off from the steppe bison. So the steppe bison really aren't, from a genetics perspective, they really aren't that different than plains or wood bison.
All right. Do we have any other questions, or if we missed anybody, let us know.
I just have a comment. I really enjoyed watching, seeing Aaron's feedback on Port Graham and Chenega from the perspective of, how marine based it was.
Yeah, that's it really is.
And, yeah, it's very cool.
And well, you talking about, how a lot of these the large land animals were introduced later too, except for the caribou. I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense.
Oh, we do have one. Please clarify the distribution of mule deer in Alaska.
The mule deer are popping up in the Fairbanks area. I talked to a guy named Tom Paraguay, who's the ADF&G. I think he's, I can't remember now if he's the area manager or the area research supervisor, but I've known Tom for a long time. He's a well-grounded, smart guy. And he was telling me about the fact that there's been a lot of observations of does and fawns and bucks and does showing up more and more frequently in the Fairbanks area.
And then whitetail are turning up too?
Yeah. And I think that's what's popping. And I think that's what's popping up in the Haines area. It's kind of interesting. I was just going to say, take a look. It's in the 2019-2020 hunting regs. I almost fell out of my chair when I first saw that we actually have a hunting reg for both of these species now. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. It'd be nice to have some blacktail around. They're a lot easier to harvest than a moose.
Well, and they're a lot easier to carry. That's the other thing, right? To pack out. So there's that.
Any other questions out there? I'm seeing none. So I want to thank our panelists and everybody who came. And we will, if you know folks that are interested in this or last week's, we're going to eventually, where we'll get them posted. And you can probably find a link on the KBC website. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thanks.